WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It is time for an All of It watch party. Last Friday, we previewed a Netflix heist action series called Lupin as part of this new series called Watch Party, where we invite listeners to watch something on the screen with us and call into the show to discuss it on air. It's kind of like book clubs, but for TV. Lupin is a unique choice for our Watch Party series for a few reasons. First, and perhaps most obviously, the whole series is in French. And yes, if you are able, it is delightful to watch it in the original French and not the dubbed version, but more on that later. Secondly, it's pretty short, just 5 episodes long, practically nothing by today's binge-watching standards. But the series is so successful at world-building that even in just 5 episodes, you will be hooked into believing all these impossible scenarios could actually happen. Lupin stars Omar Sy as Hassan Diop, a man who seeks revenge for his father, a Senegalese immigrant who was arrested for stealing a necklace from his employer when Hassan was just a boy. Not just any necklace, one that belonged to Marie Antoinette. His father subsequently kills himself in prison, leaving a young Hassan to forge his own path, which he did along with the help of a novel given to him by his father, titled Arsène Lupin, Gentleman Burglar. The book becomes a kind of holy grail for young Hassan and not only inspires him as a child, but informs his worldview. By the time he's an adult with a young son of his own, Hassan becomes a modern-day version of the novel's main character and seeks to mete out justice by stealing from those he deems deserving of such a fate. What ensues is a thrilling tale of a gentleman who is also a thief, a loving but sometimes absent father, and a mastermind of the art of deception. It's a tale that leaves you longing for more, and thankfully, there will be more. On January 28th, Netflix announced that part 2 of the series will be released this summer. With me now to talk about Lupin, why it's been such a big hit, and what might come in part 2 is Rolling Stone's chief TV critic Alan Sepinwall. He recently published a review of the show titled Lupin, Mastering the Art of the Steal. Alan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Allison. Always happy to be here.
Hey, listeners, give us a call now with your thoughts on this series, what you loved, what you didn't, what you're hoping to see more of in part 2. Our number is 646-435-7280. Okay, the phone lines are already getting full. 646-435-7280. Or you can tweet to us at All of It WNYC. And also, everybody, this segment could contain spoilers. I just want to put that up front. Okay, Alan, let's set the scene for listeners. Where do we meet C's character? When we first meet him, what is he up to?
He is getting a fake job as a custodian at the Louvre so he can set up the first of the many elaborate heists he is pulling off over the course of these episodes.
What did you think of the way it was filmed at the Louvre?
I think it's gorgeous. I've been to the Louvre once back in college, which is, 10,000 years ago at this point. But I think that it does a really nice job of taking advantage of their access to this great location and showing just how smoothly a guy like Hassan can move in, both high culture and low culture.
Oh, when we first meet him at the Louvre, the actor Omar Sy said in an interview, When I read the script, I thought to myself that the scene couldn't possibly be shot on location. It came as a total surprise when the Louvre not only opened their doors to our crew, but proved to be extremely flexible and supportive, so much so that after spending 5 nights on the premises, I got the impression that we were home. What is shooting an iconic location like that? What does that do for a series that is in part unbelievable?
I mean, I think it works exactly against that, which is most of what Asan is doing is really, really ridiculous. But so you have to find different ways to ground it. And a lot of it is just that Omar Sy is so charismatic that like you will go with almost anything he does. But also like when it's in the Louvre and you're filming in the Louvre and not on a recreation, you can tell. Even if you've never been there yourself, it's so clear, and it really helps to ground the action and puts one foot in the real world, even if everything else he's doing just should not make any sense at all.
Omar Sy is an executive producer on the show and had a big hand in getting it off the ground. He handpicked the role after being asked by the production company who made the series for Netflix to pick a character he wanted to play. Now, so for people who think, gosh, that guy looks really, really familiar, what else has Omar Sy been in?
He was Bishop in one of the X-Men movies. That was his big thing over here.
And how is this different for him from other things that he's done?
Well, I mean, he gets to do it in French. He's the lead. He is absurdly charming and charismatic. You can't take your eyes off him. He seems really large. Like, actors generally are small. What if we took a regular leading man and we made him much taller and much wider? What if we like crossbred him with a brick wall? How would that work? And somehow you get Omar Sy, and he's just like, you can't stop looking at him. He is riveting.
Let's take some calls. Arlette on line 5 is a French teacher. Hi, Arlette. Thanks for calling All of It.
Bonjour. Nice to talk with you.
Bonjour. Tell us what you think of Lupin.
Well, I saw it as a series, and I loved it so much that I created an entire unit about it, and we just finished it yesterday. We went back into the history of Le Collier de la Reine with Marie Antoinette's scandal with Louis XVI, and we followed up into modern day with a comparison between Sherlock Holmes and Arsène Lupin. We ordered the book in French and in English so that the students could compare, and it is groundbreaking on so many different levels that I've used it with my level 4 class to go over just the incredible diversity of the characters, the story, the history, the creativity of it, the incredible acting. They knew Omar Sy from Les Intouchables, another film we had done in years past. And we brought it into modern day, and we applied it also to the AP themes that you have for La Quête de Soi, searching for your definition of yourself, L'Esthétique, talking about beauty. You can apply it to so many different facets of life. It's a very, very richly layered, complex story. I had to edit it because not every scene was appropriate for high school, but it was just a fabulous, great way to expose the kids to what is, you see modern day France, and you see so many scenes, and the cultural references were just phenomenal, and the kids loved it. They really responded well to it. So it goes with diversity. It goes with the idea of modern tasks. It's just a great story that, honestly, I had never heard of before this. And now that I know so much about it, I'm a huge fan.
Kudos to you as a teacher as well for taking the reins and doing something so creative. Thank you for calling in, Arlette. Let's go to Mike on line 1. Hey, Mike, thanks for calling All of It. What are you feeling about Lupin?
Hello. Hi.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hi. So I liked it. I felt like some of the stuff that he managed to pull off was like a little bit wild. Like I had trouble believing it. Like even in the scene when he, at the Louvre, he changed his net worth when he was like forging his identity. I remember that. And then there was also when he was going after, I guess, the cop, he's like talking to the cop over loudspeakers in his house or something. He like got into the cop's like Alexa to intimidate him and stuff. But some of the stuff he pulled off, like I get that this is like a detective mystery type of thing. But at the same time, I felt like it was so I had trouble suspending my disbelief. even though I'm generally able to do that. And I think as an English, you know, English language person, I wish they had done a little bit of exposition in the plot or just with dialogue about Lupin. Like you're able to get it ultimately that for me or for us, it would be like a Sherlock Holmes or like a James Bond or something. Like, and it's clearly, I would imagine it's something that you grew up with and you know in France, but not in the English speaking world. And I think they could have done a better job of explicitly establishing that. And that would have been helpful because it's an international audience,
right?
Obviously. So anybody outside of the French speaking world, I think is probably going, well, you can't quite situate it. And of course exposition can be heavy handed, but yeah, I would have appreciated. It was just a little absurd, some of the stuff he managed, even as clever as he is.
Mike, thanks so much. I'm curious, Alan, as a television critic, how did you feel about the absurdity?
There's definitely times where I had my eyes rolled into the back of my head. There's one episode where he goes on the live TV broadcast to release this really important bit of footage. And it's just like, why is he doing this? Why would he risk this? It just sometimes it makes no sense to me. And I think, to be in perfect candor, if this was like an American-made English language show, I would probably be a little bit harder on some of that stuff. And for whatever reason, the fact that I'm watching the subtitled French version and the fact that I just love Omar Sy so much, I went with it.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the dubbing. The show has been criticized for using dubbing English. And of course, you need, for people who are visually impaired, that's very important that you're able to follow the story through the dubbing. But for people who are able to read the subtitles, many people have said, oh my gosh, this dubbing is making me crazy. So for people who didn't realize there was a difference, let's take a listen to two short clips from the same scene. This is a clip from episode 2 where Asan is speaking to his confidant Benjamin about a potential clue he's noticed in an old letter from his father. We'll take a listen to the English and then in French.
I make spelling mistakes all the time, so.
Yeah, well, so do I. But my father never did, let alone twice in a row.
Yeah, and?
Look at this. Comet and libraries.
Sure, and?
I checked it out. Back then, there was a guy in prison with my father named Etienne Comit. C-O-M-I-T. Guess where he worked?
At the library?
Exactly.
Okay, so that was the English. Now let's listen to that exact same scene in French.
J'en fais toujours, moi, des fautes d'orthographe. Toi et moi, oui. Mais mon père, jamais. Encore moins deux de suite.
Ouais. Et?
Regarde. Comet bibliothèque.
Oui.
Et? Mais j'ai regardé. Et à l'époque, avec mon père en prison, il y avait un détenu qui s'appelait Étienne Comet. C-O-M-E-T. Et tu sais où il était affecté?
À la bibliothèque?
Exactement.
Exactement. Bibliothèque. So, Ellen, how did you watch it?
Initially, I was doing it entirely subtitled. Then at a certain point, I did this insane thing that no one quite believes I did, which is if it was a scene that Asan was not in, I would switch to the dub version just so I could get through the exposition a little bit more easily. And then as soon as Asan appeared on the screen, I went back to the subtitled version because, as you just heard, it's night and day, the level of the performance, the passion that's going on in this character. And what's not even there in that clip is whenever Asan is assuming another role, he's like in some kind of disguise, Omar Sy is doing so many different things with his voice that the English dubbing actor is not even bothering to do. And you're losing so much of what's there on top of just it being a much better performance. So if you do have the patience to go with the subtitles, it is a vastly, vastly better show that way.
Today's watch party, we're talking about Lupin on Netflix. If you want to get in on the conversation, 646-435-7280. What did you like about Lupin? What didn't you like? We'd love to hear from you. Our ride along for this hour is Rolling Stone chief TV critic Alan Sepinwall. Okay, let's get to some folks who have some criticisms of Lupin. Let's go to Kima on line 2, I believe. Hi, Kima. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi.
Your criticism, I've had some friends say this, so I'm curious to hear what other people think.
Yeah. Well, first, I thought it was great to begin with, and I was really happy about the series, and I loved the anime and the books, but I noticed, and I couldn't finish the series because I got a little upset, because there was no black women, his love interest, his ex-wife. His mom is dead. I didn't even see like a picture of her in the background, and I was just like, where are the black women? It upset me. It felt kind of like tokenism just to have this one black lead character and no other black characters. I know his son is there, but I didn't see any black women, and it was annoying, so I didn't finish the series.
I'm going to bet part two takes care of that, because I have seen that criticism a lot and heard a lot. Thanks for calling in with it. Ian on line three. Ian, what were you thinking about Lupin?
Oh, yeah, just to piggyback on the last call, and thank you for taking my call. I did notice around episode four when he goes looking for the reporter, you know, the minute I noticed that it was an older woman, in my head I'm like, oh, she's dead by the end of the episode, you know, and it's the trope that I wanted to bring up there, you know. The older woman, you know, she's a plot device, and then as soon as she's done, you know, they just off her.
Thanks for calling in. Alan, did you notice any sort of tropes or anything you thought, they might have done this a little bit better?
No, the older woman reporter was dead meat from the moment she turned up. There's a bunch of things. I don't think, like, story-wise, this is the greatest show ever. I think it's just told really, really well, and he's so good that he elevates a lot of things that would seem like cliche with even slightly lesser performer in that role.
Okay, so Dara on Twitter says the post-colonial subtext was interesting. What did you think about this subtle, sometimes not so subtle politics that crept into the show, the post-colonial, when he rips off the woman of her jewels, and then she explains how they went and they just basically ripped off the diamond mines in Africa?
Yeah, the show is not subtle about it, and it seems like that, but that's a very effective and satisfying. It's like they make sure that usually when he's ripping someone off, they're an exploiter in some way who deserved to be taken advantage of. One of the more interesting things I found about the show is, as I talked about before, like, this is a guy you can't help but notice because of his size, because of his handsomeness, because of his charisma, and yet he's able to slip into all of these roles. There's an episode where he literally changes places with another prisoner who looks nothing like him whatsoever, but because they're both black, he just is able to get away with it in the nation of France. And I always sort of enjoy the joke that they're able to put here that, like, people just don't really pay attention to him in the way that they should.
Let's go to Mokhtar on line four, calling in from Westchester. Hi, Mokhtar. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Hi, Alison. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just called to disagree with Kima, who was saying no diversity. I mean, for black women, I agree, but it's a very diverse crew because you have Algerian, you have two black people. I mean, it was very refreshing to see that, especially when you are from Europe. So you don't see that often, and I want to just emphasize that Omar Sy did a great job in producing. But again, it's very, very unusual for Europeans to see that. We are not in the U.S.
Thank you so much for the context. Thank you. Let's go to Julie in Brooklyn on line five. Hi, Julie. Thanks for calling All of It. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I am a beginning French student studying at the Alliance Française, mm-hmm. and I listened to Lupin, and what I did with it was I used French subtitles, and then if I couldn't understand what was being said, which was often, I would freeze the scene and read the subtitle, and then after I had gone through the movie once that way, I went through it one or two more times, playing it at a slower speed, but listening to the French. And I found the movie so funny and fun and yes, unbelievable, but it's kind of pleasant and enjoyable to learn French by watching those scenes over and over again. And of course, you learn words that you don't usually get taught in class.
Love that. Julie, thanks for calling in. My guest is Rolling Stone chief TV critic Alan Sepinwall. We watched Lupin for this edition of Watch Party. So I want to ask you a little bit of a business question. Lupin is the first French show to make Netflix's top 10 list in the U.S. You know, Netflix is interesting, I'll say, about their metrics. You never quite know. They offer numbers, and they're big numbers, but you don't really know how to put them in context. They said the series is expected to be viewed by 70 million households in the first month. How do you think, is this show a success because we're talking about it? Is it a success because so many people have watched it? How does Netflix decide what's a success? Do they just tell us?
And you know, and your listeners know about as well as I do about how Netflix actually measures success. It's a black box. They don't tell us anything. Even some of these numbers metrics that they talk about are often like how many people watched 30 seconds of something or maybe 2 minutes of something. And if you've been scrolling through the Netflix interface, you know, like you can sit on like something and it'll autoplay while you're taking a phone call. That counts as a view. So it's really, I try not to pay any attention whatsoever to like any of their claims about what is successful and what is not. The things you look at is basically what are they renewing? What aren't they? They've canceled a lot of stuff lately. I can only assume that some of those shows were not being as watched as these, you know, even the whole what's in the top 10 and what isn't. That will only tell you so much. So I try not to worry about it other than, is this show that I like going to continue, or are they spending all this money on shows that I don't enjoy? But beyond that, they don't release their viewership data in any meaningful way, so don't sweat it.
My guest has been Alan Sepinwall, chief TV critic for Rolling Stone. Thanks for joining us for Watch Party, Alan.
My pleasure.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink. Drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.